So this is a talk which is designed for discussion. So you can tear it apart, but make it gently, please. So what is the outline? In a way, as it is a conceptual talk, I am glad that I cover topics that other speakers already spoke about. But where I see some differences, I will emphasize, and I will be fast on those points where I think that there is an agreement. So I shall speak about the niche concepts, and within that, the original Darwinian one, the so-called Hutchinsonian one, and on the Gaussian one. And then I shall switch to speak a bit about Darwinian speciation. I choose the title as adaptive diversification because in this room, different people think about different things when they speak about speciation and species, but perhaps we agree on adaptive diversification. Everyone have the same notion. Then the Darwinian concept of gap formation and coexistence, then I try to link these two things, that niche concepts and Darwinian speciation, and speak about the problem of robust coexistence and population regulation in speciation in terms of population regulation and speciation in terms of niche segregation. Okay. So the niche concept, as you already said, is a vague concept. It doesn't mean that it is completely meaningless. So a lot of people use the niche in that sense that each species has to find its place under the sun, which means that each species should have a unique place under the sun. And when the other concepts, when we speak about ecological place and ecological role, these are the two aspects of the niche, which is usually called Grinnellian and Eltonian. This is a slide from Wolf on white, so it is not that nice, that like his ones, that Darwin used the terms not the niche term, but wrote about the places of the species in the natural policy and in the economy of nature. Let's focus on this for a while, because over the last 2 or 3 years, my deepest surprise was that Darwin just thought in population dynamical terms, and He had such an unbelievable, coherent population dynamical theory, which is usually not recognized, and therefore I speak a bit about that. So this is the context where the places in the polity of nature occurs, and this is not an easy statement. So I shall come back to this statement to. In various respects later, but notice that the species diversify has widely diversified places in the polity of nature, and this makes them possible to increase in numbers. I shall come back to this later. What is the Hutchinsonian niche? It's complete agreement what Bob told us this morning. This is when the intrinsic rate of increase, which is here, there is another notation denoted by little r null, is higher than zero. This is usually measured since Birch studies in 1984, in labs in that way that they give abundant food to the populations what they study, and this mimics the situation when a population start to grow from a low density and low grows for a while until it stabilizes, fluctuates around population density, and its long-run growth rate gets zero. And here, several niche concepts used in relation to the Hutchinsonian niche concept. And this habitat niche, trophic niche, and climatic niche. This very often occurs also in the speciation literature, and in this sense, as I wrote it there. Okay. What is the difference between the original general vague niche concept and these niche concepts? That these are don't have to be species-specific. So the two species may have the same habitat niche, they are in the same habitat, under the same climate, so they may have the same climatic niche, and also they may have the same trophic niche. Because we assume that then they segregate in something else. So these concepts just don't capture the original essence of the intuitive niche concept, which was also used by Darwin, that it has to be a unique place within the whole system. And if you look into textbooks of ecology, then you find this type of definitions. And telling the truth, for many, many years, I just didn't want to talk about niches. I didn't teach niches to my students. I thought that it is completely useless because this is an endless task. Anyone can say that there is a further niche axis where the species can segregate, and then it has no end. And unfortunately, this was the end of the MacArthur school also, in a way, that the whole school ran into this problem that where to stop and how. Let's see and whether is it an illuminating example or not, you will decide. But let's see this example. This butterfly was introduced back to England very successfully, on the condition that people realized that what is essential for this butterfly is the presence of Myrmica subuleti nest, because this is a species-specific requirement for the Maculinea species. What does this mean? This means that this Maculinea species is regulated just by a single regulating factor, regulating variable, and this is the presence of this specific species in the area. It was very complicated because the whole story, because they had to figure out it has a very narrow humidity and temperature requirement, this species, and therefore the grazing is necessary on the area in order to keep the thymus on such a level which in the root provides a proper temperature for the Myrmica species. Okay, so there was a very complex situation with a lot of environmental variables and a hell of a lot of work to figure this out for several years of research. But from a population regulation point of view, this situation is very simple, because it was enough to introduce the it was enough to provide opportunity for the Myrmica species to reintroduce the Maculinea arion into these plots. So you don't have, because These are obligate parasites, these Maculina species on Myrmica species, and very, very species specific. If you speak about their niches, it is just enough to find this regulating factor. Darwin also mentioned several times in his Origins text that you always have to think, how can you provide an advantage for a species over the other ones in a certain area? And this means that how to figure out what checks, what control, what regulate the population of the species. Okay, let's get to the Gaussian niche. It means that the Myrmica species nests are a non-divisible resource for the Maculina species, I guess. Perhaps there will be someone who will tell me not, then I will be glad to learn that. But as far as I know, it is not. It has narrow temperature and humidity tolerance. Just provide enough food for the developing caterpillar one nest. And under this condition, one expects that the other Maculina species will be obligate parasites of other Myrmica species. Okay? So you can make, because the population regulation is single factorial, and because you don't see any chance for division this resource by an environmental variable, therefore you expect that the closely related other species will have the chance just to switch to other host species in this group. Another example of this kind would be the bats example. Both these were published in Nature, these papers, where both the intraspecific, they find their mate and they find their food with echolocation, and the wavelengths of the sound what they give and the size of the prey what they find is correlated on that way that this is the size of the bats and this is the frequency of the sound what they produce. This is a within species ecotypic variation, and you see that the size is very much determined by the frequency in clumps, so it's very discrete. And then you look at the genetic background, and you find three different genetically already differentiated group. And In correspondence to this, if you go up to one level again and compare various bats with echolocation, they also seem to be specialized on diet by size. And this may be the explanation of the presence of various species, that they produce frequencies that they produce sounds with different frequencies, thus they have different groups of prey what they can find. Okay, so here, if it is the Gaussian niche, is in this example, is just that you have the prey size distribution, what you categorize into three ones, and here you have to give the impact on the prey size of each ecomorph if they overlap. If they don't overlap, it is unnecessary, and you don't have to handle the impact and the sensitivity in this problem. Just look at the division of prey according to their discrete size classes. Yes? So when we speak about the Gaussian niche, then we speak about key question is that what regulates the long-term growth rate of the population of the populations to zero. And this is very often a tricky question, but now we have literature just showing that of course this is done. The longer you measure, the longer time series you have on a population, the estimate of the long-run growth rate will be nearer to zero. So now it is also supported by data, though this is a thing that must be. This is a must-be thing that doesn't require empirical confirmation. Okay, so a Gaussian niche of a species is a specific set of regulating variables under a set of environmental conditions. And in case of shared, shared regulating variables, it matters how the population, the species, impact the regulating variables and how their and the sensitivity of their growth rate to these variables. Okay, this is a regulating feedback loop. Evi calls this and adaptive dynamics this environmental feedback loop, yeah, or something like that. So this is a regulating feedback loop. So here is the regulating variable, and this is the definition of the regulating variable. So those variables which cause which leads to the regulation of population growth rate. And then you have the impact and sensitivity as the two arms of this regulating feedback. And you have external conditions, modifying conditions like temperature, like humidity, like pH, which are not regulating themselves most of the time, but may impact, may have an effect on these relations. So in different environments, under different conditions, this will look slightly differently. Different functions will describe the impact and sensitivity. And in parallel, in symmetry of this, if you have various genetic races, various alleles, clones, depending on what you work with, then this feedback loop, again, even with the same regulating variable, will change from situation to situation. And this is the art to describe these dependencies. Okay, let's get back to this Darwinian speciation quotation. So this is that the more diversified the descendants of any one species become in structure, constitution, and habits, by so much will they be enabled to increase in numbers. Okay, so that this is the population dynamic essence of the principle of divergence. When outsiders summarize Darwin, for instance, there is a very good book of Tagar on conceptual revolutions published by Princeton University Press, and I've got this from him. They say that there is the Malthusian principle, so the potential for exponential growth, which is very necessary. Then because of the unavoidable checks on growth, you have struggle for existence. And if there is genetic variation, then natural selection comes, and then this induces evolution. And here there is a major difference between the genetic approach and the ecological approach to the same problem. And my statement is that Darwin had an ecological theory of natural selection. Of course, not a genetical, but ecological one, a population dynamical theory of natural selection. This was the original definition of natural selection. the preservation of favorable individual differences and variations, and the destruction of those which are injurious. And I left it out, the survival of the fittest, in this sense, okay? Because this was the essence. What does this mean? It means that either there will be exclusion between similar variants that share the checkzone growth, similar habits, constitution, and behavior, or there will be coexistence of dissimilar variants that have different checkzone growth. This is the so-called principle of divergence, the second one. If we just look at this text, which says that the struggle will be most severe between the most similar forms because they frequent the same districts, the same food, the same, and they exposed to the same dangers. In both terms, they share resources and natural enemies. So this is the cause of exclusion. If we look what kind of checkson growth Darwin mentioned in his ecological chapter in The Origins, it cannot be by accident that we have all those regulating factors that we usually see today. So space, food, predator, herbivore, low density, LE effect, parasitic worms, flies, pollinators. It's parasites, what is in the example. So gives a full list of potential regulating variables. We can discuss later what this struggle with the elements mean. Okay, so this is the principle of divergence, what we have seen already. To my surprise, there was a very important paper published in Nature by David Resnick and Robert Rickleps about Darwin's bridge between microevolution and macroevolution, where they explained that the principle of divergence was completely forgotten for a while. And if we consider extinction and principle of divergence, then we see how the evolutionary tree, the tree of life, branches and gets wider and wider. It got 20 citations since 2009, which I consider rather bad. I don't really know why. Okay. Here is again a very nice picture of Wolf. What does this mean? How this is connected to the general idea of niche construction? And I completely agree with Wolf's interpretation that here, where you have time and you have the fitness landscape. The fitness curves in each time slot, and the process itself changes the fitness landscape. This is a new feature which is where the specific models do not matter. The beauty of the theory, I would like to theory which can be used on the field, and the beauty in itself of the mathematical constructions don't attract me that much, and also the other field biologists. Although they are very nice in a mathematical sense, and it's very good that you are so clever and make them. But why I went back to Darwin is just to emphasize that this environmental feedback and population regulation drives the whole process. It is not something which is very much connected to some theoretical construction, some very specific assumptions. It is very, very possible that that changes in nature are not that continuous, not that tiny, but much more robust. But the essence of the idea was already there in Darwin, and just the very same, without any equation and any knowledge of. Okay, so I don't know why I did, and perhaps I have to. By the way, this comes from Luontin, and if you want to discuss historical things, we should later acknowledge that Luontin, the geneticist, was much more ecological in the 60s than the ecologists themselves when he discussed adaptation and at the population level and tried to figure out what is going on in a series of papers. So the speciation and the problem of robust coexistence, I will jump here because Evie so nicely explained that coexistence, the problem of coexistence is the essence of speciation if there is gene flow. Of course, if you have geographically isolated populations, gene flow doesn't matter. But adaptive divergence with gene flow essentially raises the problem of coexistence. You cannot avoid that. But the coexistence can be on various levels. And very often, it is a metapopulation level where you have a widely spread population with dispersal between metapopulation with dispersal within this within this system, and then you have to look at these scales and have you define your fitness on this large scale, and you have to define everything on this scale. And the same happens with environmental fluctuation. If you have environmental fluctuation, it doesn't mean that you just leave the realm of the niche concept. It just means that you have to at least you have to study your population at that so long as the long-run growth rate gets zero, but not these very tiny things when. So the speciation and the problem of robust coexistence, especially a hot issue when we speak about the possibility, whether it is possible to speciate just through sexual selection without any reinforcement from niche segregation in the above sense. If you have a lot of examples where you have completely identical species which have mating, assortative mating, then okay, it may work. But if you don't have these plenty of examples, then I don't think that it can work. Okay, let's have a look on Geza's slide, which I think very important in relation to the Hutchinsonian idea, because this bring to us that multidimensional space, continuous and multidimensional, not necessarily continuous and not necessarily multidimensional. Just have in mind the Great Blue introduction to Britain. So the environment can be patchy. There are lots of cases when host specificity induces speciation, and not everything gradual. So what is important here that if you have a modifying variable like temperature, so you have warm and cool patches, and you adapt to feeding either in warm or in cold patches, this is just the same that when you have a temperature gradient and you divide this temperature gradient to several species. So one species consumes the same food at low temperature, the other in medium, and so on. The literature is full of these examples. I shall show you that the majority of the examples have this nature. There is no conceptual difference between a niche axis where you divide the food by temperature or you divide the food by food size. So the niche axes are food size here and temperature, and both of them can be divided on the same ground. And then it's, of course, it's a question which is determined by the nature of the species, that how many species can be pegged. And not only on the nature of the species, but also that how many fluctuations there are in the environment, which may explain partly the richness of the tropics and the relatively poor number of species in temperate regions. Okay, so I tried to start to make some review, and I shall do this review if I get positive feedback from you that it is worth to do, because it's hell a lot of work. That I started to screen the literature just after 2000, and focused on the examples, so on the empirical results from people or simulation models from people, and try to figure out that what kind of niche segregation they had in mind when they plan and made their research, what can be the regulating variables, and so on. And if I use the classic division that there is maybe functional segregation in space by Pace or gradiencing, or segregation in time, you see that the vast majority of papers, this I went to the first 300, and it is 78, so very many look at segregation in space, then by food, and much less by anything else. If you look at the literature in terms of population regulation, of course it is a tricky thing to decide that these are the potential regulating factors which are mentioned by the authors, not necessarily proved that these factors regulate the populations, because they don't have explicitly population regulation in mind. Then you see that a lot of works just consider food populations, then nutrient population in case of plants, but also parasites and pollinators and parasitoids and all those which are listed here with one or two examples I already found. If you look at the modifying external conditions, then you have this, that climate is a favorite modifying external condition, temperature, humidity, salinity, and stress. These are the first one which are considered. So when you look at a special gradient, these are usually considered. Oh, the relevant ecological measurements, because these are those things which the field biologists know much more than me, but have a look. So this is when you, in case of special segregation along a gradient of a modifying external condition, okay, then very often it's enough to measure the innate capacity of increase, the intrinsic rate of increase, and its dependence on the modifying environmental variable. In ecological terms, it means that you get the functional response and the ecological tolerance, and there are quite some works doing this in the literature already. But look, if there is an arcade trade-off, what people liked for many, many years, then from measuring the initial rate of increase and its dependence on the environment, it will not work, because you other species will win the competition then, which has not necessarily those which have the highest initial rate of increase. So this is part of the problem. Okay. In case of functional segregation, so according to food type or host or something, what would be essential is a field experiments for the identification of the actual regulating variables. And this is a question of how you look at the problem, whether you just look in so-called fitness, relative fitness, directional selection in different environments, or you take serious that the whole thing, the whole setup is determined by the regulating variables. And this is something that should be discussed and which is related to the question of competition. Because competition will be important only if in relation to the regulating factors. Andrew gave a very nice example. If humans just increase the amount of food and give plenty of food to these Darwin finches, then all the differentiation will disappear. Okay? Because it is not food that regulates anymore the population, but something else. Okay. In impacts and sensitivity, so let's say consumption rates, depletion rates, and then the sensitivity also in terms of case well, has to be measured only in case of overlaps, but then it should. And I think that Darwin finches, as they are so well studied and so many and so robust ecological knowledge we have about them due to the grants and this very, very long-term work, is a very good candidate to tangle this out, and I wish that Andrew and others could have got enough money and power to make this. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for your very interesting talk. In the interest of time, maybe we'll take one question.
Okay.
You know, before I think that some of these topics, we've got two discussion sessions scheduled, and I haven't heard anything said yet about what we're doing. And so maybe after the next talk, we can hear about what the plans are for the two discussion sessions.
In the very moment, we don't have very specific plans, I think that at the very beginning, the various conceptual, the niche concepts which were erased
right.
can be discussed.
Right, okay.
Which were, okay.
I mean, I have some thoughts but I'll wait
okay.
Okay, for a general discussion to pose them to you. So our next